and welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Friday, April 22nd, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster on KJLL AM 1330, and we are always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We urge you to go to buckmastershow.com. We've got some exciting news about the future of the Buckmaster Show with an announcement there, which you can find at buckmastershow.com. Today's Friday Focus interview features a conversation with Raul Grijalva, Democrat representing the 7th Congressional District of Arizona in Washington, D.C. Joining me to talk with Congressman Grijalva is Linda Valdez, editorial writer for the Arizona Republic. Congressman, it's good to see you. Thank you very much for joining us on the Buckmaster Show on this beautiful Friday.
And, well, thank you, and sorry about the delay. We had logistical issues. I got lost. I lived in Tucson 60 years, and I got lost.
That is not a problem. The most important thing is
and I didn't have to wear a tie
today.
That's
right. That's right. Every time we have been together in person, you've had to wear a tie, and you on TV you did, and we really appreciated it. And you've been on our program a couple of times by phone. We appreciate
Thank
that
you.
As well. Let's get right into it, Congressman. As co-chair of the Progressive Caucus, you recently introduced what you call the People's Budget. Tell us about the main components of that that budget, and what are you hoping to accomplish there?
We wanted to really put something on the table. We had the Democratic Alternative, we had the Republican Study Conference, we had the Ryan budget, and then you have various machinations that's going on in the Senate, and then you kind of had the parameters that the president set out. We wanted to put something on the table because if you really look at the situation that we're talking about, that we are going to have to deal with the deficit issue. You can't avoid it, and you shouldn't avoid it. So there has to be a deficit reduction portion to it. We wanted to incorporate that. There has to be a movement toward lowering the overall debt of this nation, and we dealt with that. So that was a starting point. The second one was, quite frankly, and I don't want to say this in a wrong way, it was public opinion. And public opinion said and continues to say as we speak, we don't want you messing with Medicare. We like Medicaid the way it is. You might want to raise the income cap on Social Security to create more revenue. You might want to look at age down the road, but basically leave it alone. The American public also said in poll after poll, we need more attention on an investment in education, particularly higher ed. And they wanted immediate job creation, putting people to work. So that was components A. Now, where do you find the money for the deficit reduction and for the investment? We went at areas that are not on the table. We looked at military spending, primarily the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and a responsible, quick redeployment out of there, which those conflicts are up to almost $2 trillion, that not only the fiscal but also the human treasures that we've lost there. Then immediately rescind the Bush tax cuts to the upper 2%, cut the oil and gas subsidies, which is $40 billion a year, and over a course of 10 years would be $400 billion. Close the corporate loopholes, and as the primary engine drivers for deficit reduction and revenue generation. So we incorporated those in, and that's basically the budget. We reached neutral, we balanced budget by 2021, by the way, the only budget that did that, and the debt reduction by 64% in 10 years. Not full debt elimination of the debt. But that was the budget, and it was a different source of where to get revenue and where to make cuts than the ones that are on the table.
Congressman Raul Grijalva is our guest on the Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show. Here's Linda Valdez of the Arizona Republic.
Good morning, Congressman. The president had a meeting this week on immigration, a private meeting. No members of Congress were invited, as I understand. What did you take away from that? What have you heard about what went on in that meeting, and how serious do you think the president is about actually working for comprehensive immigration reform this year?
I think he needs to be very serious about it. And it's not only the political consequences of not doing something, it's also there's a level of frustration that's growing within the Hispanic community in this country. That, yes, it is a divisive, touchy, and very often ugly issue, politically and in many levels. But something has to be done. I think it's going to be very difficult, in all honesty, to look at what you just said, comprehensive immigration reform, given the makeup and the tenor of the discussion around immigration in Congress. But the president, I think, it has to be more than a gesture, has to start moving that discussion forward. And his pulpit is tremendous.
Do you think he's going to use that pulpit this time?
I sincerely hope he does. If I could say in the affirmative, absolutely, Linda, I would, but I can't.
Just one quick question about the DREAM Act. Now, it failed in December. It failed by 5 votes in the Senate, and there were 5 Democrats who voted against it. Did the president lean on those Democrats at all?
Not to the information I have. I mean, a lot of immigration votes, the leadership tells us, it tells members that feel that it could be jeopardizing their election to walk away from it. And you get a free ride. You get a pass on it. In the House, we were very fortunate that no passes were given. So it was an up or down vote, and that's why we were successful in the House when most people thought we wouldn't be. And in the Senate, it passed the Senate, too. That 60 threshold.
Right. So
I think that with the request from the group of 70 and from other members of Congress, including the Hispanic caucus, including the Asian Pacific caucus, to the president is use within the boundaries of law. Mm-hmm. Within the boundaries of law, break no laws, to extend, redefine hardship. So that family separation and one person being a citizen and the other isn't becomes a means to be able to petition on a hardship issue. That would end the DREAM Act. Create a low tone of enforcement so that they can continue to pursue. We're asking for this not to get away from comprehensive reform. I think it's just a political reality. And it's going to be very, very difficult in this climate leading to 212. To be able to get something out of the House. If we can't get anything out of the House, nothing's going to happen.
Before we take our break, I want to ask you about the one-year anniversary of SB 1070. It's hard to believe it's been a year, but I believe that anniversary is this weekend.
Right.
Some of your comments, please.
I haven't planned on any particular celebration up to this point. But thank you for the thought. I learned, and I hope the state learned, that this piece of legislation has probably been the most divisive I've seen in our state and in our communities in a long, long time. It brought a lot of rawness into the discussion that shouldn't be in there. And now we're still in that litigation point. At the end of the year, I hope that people have stopped to consider what the effects have been. I don't agree with Pierce saying that it has been a boon to business and a boon to the civility of this state. Absolutely not. It's hurt on both sides.
Yeah, he was saying that
those
U-Haul dealers are making a lot of money.
Probably because people are renting them to leave, you know. But I would suggest, though, that even, and I include myself in that discussion, that, you know, when we talked about economic sanctions and the whole issue of the boycott, as an envelope I pushed, then in retrospect didn't help the conversation at all because it focused on that political discussion. It didn't talk about the legislation and the consequences of the legislation.
And so you regret it and you wouldn't do it again?
No, I wouldn't do it again. I told my kids growing up, don't ever do stuff when you're really, really angry. And I broke my own pledge. But, it didn't have the impact that I would have hoped. It didn't make people sit back down and say, okay, let's try to figure something else out. But, and it didn't help the dialogue. And it
didn't the economic price that Arizona paid get the business community to step up this year and oppose this year?
Oh, that was wonderful. That was wonderful. And I was very, when I saw those 60 names and plus others, and what happened in Utah with the compact with Utah, those are all bright lights in this otherwise dismal discussion around immigration and 1070. I think it made people realize that there is a consequence, and that regardless of somebody calling for something or not, that people are going to make some decisions about where they're going to spend their money. And I thought it was not only, in a very human sense, a good thing the business community did, but for the economy of the state, it was a very, very smart thing to do as well.
We're going to take a break right there. Linda Valdez is with me from the Arizona Republic. We're talking with Congressman Raul Grijalva on the Buckmaster Show. We will be back talking with the congressman. Perhaps we can talk a little bit about Libya and foreign affairs. That's coming up next.
Imagine a jewelry store that is both sophisticated and organic, where Tucson's rich cultural heritage mingles with contemporary design. We invite you to Veer Jewelers, where our commitment to customer service is surpassed only by our reputation for creating inspired custom jewelry that is as unique as our customers. At Veer Jewelers, you are warmly welcomed, whether you are bringing in an heirloom for repair or design, replacing a watch battery, or shopping for a special gift. Visit our unique showroom, centrally located on Campbell, just north of Grant, or visit our website at veerjewelers.com. Veer Jewelers, Tucson's trusted jeweler for more than 25 years.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Nell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
22 minutes now past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster, and I'm joined today by Linda Valdez. It's good to have Linda with us, editorial writer for the Arizona Republic, and our focus guest today, Congressman Raul Grijalva. And let's turn it over to Linda, and I think Linda's got a question about some foreign affairs. Linda.
Congressman, I'd like to get your thoughts on Libya. First of all, does the United States need to be involved in a third war in the Middle East? And to what extent is it our role to remove Gaddafi from office?
To your first question, no. I think that would be on many levels a huge mistake. And as you can see, there's some stumbling around going on in terms of the administration, how they're going to handle this. The president was very firm that there would be no boots on the ground in Libya, and still trying to figure out what the role will be in the no-fly zone and our involvement with the airstrikes there. You basically now have a civil war going on of tremendous proportions. And what should our role be? When it first happened, my reaction is, why, you know, we've had... And this is, you know, everybody knows Gaddafi is a brutal dictator, and he's killing his own people. And there's no room for equivocation on that or any excuse. But we have that same kind of issue in other countries all over where there's brutal dictatorships. And so what point is our policy to go in one place and not the other? Some of my colleagues were saying we've seen this in Kenya. We've seen this in the brutality in the Sudan. We've seen it in on and on and on. And at what point do you go in and not come in? I think I wish we wouldn't have taken the step we did. There had to be an international response, and we could have been part of it and not be the leader on it. Because I think what's happened now, that this is now primarily the United States' involvement in Libya and everybody else following. And I think that's what the president was trying to do, to try to internationalize it more. But I think the genie's out of the bottle, and I think it's going to be the call of our country as to what role we play from now on. Now there's humanitarian aid going into the rebels, armaments going into the rebels, the tune of $25 million. I think our role as picking a side is pretty well cemented. And if that side doesn't prevail, we're back to square one, and we've got a whole different international crisis on our hands.
I want to bring it back to Southern Arizona and the Rosemont mine controversy. As you know, Rosemont asked business leaders and some of the unions to step forward and urge the U.S. Forest Service to fast-track the environmental permits that are needed. Where are you on this whole Rosemont issue?
I've essentially been opposed to it from the beginning. I think this last request and many of the signers, the unions and the business people that signed it are people I know and respect. But we have to respect the process here. We're not just talking about a piddling little hole that we're going to dig in the Santa Ritas. We're talking about something that has consequences, both to air quality, the environment, the forest itself, wildlife, aquifer issues in terms of water, and safety issues. And so every step that has to be taken, because one of the things that happens every time we have a land trade or a swap or a permit is issued is 10, 15 years later, somebody will say, well, that was an unintended consequence of that. Well, the process is in place to check on unintended consequences. There shouldn't be any. And if there are issues there that have to be dealt with, if there are issues there as a consequence of this full assessment process, and I'm not for short-circuiting it, what step do you skip? What audience and what public response do you have? It is a huge, sensitive issue to this region. It has to be open. It has to be transparent, and the public has to have the ability to weigh in. And this process is the only way in we have. If you short-circuit it, then there's no check and balance. And we might not like NEPA, that process. We might not like the full environmental assessment process, but it is a check and balance. Otherwise, unintended consequences would abound. And so I'm totally against the idea of short-circuiting, skipping, or waiving any of the procedures that we have to have now.
Got about 3 minutes to go. Here's Linda Valdez with kind of a quick question, I guess. Got about 3 minutes, Congressman.
Congressman, Arizona's going to have an open Senate seat in 2012, and that's sort of the opportunity that doesn't come along very often. But we're hearing a lot about people who aren't running rather than, aside from Jeff Flake, about people who are running. What bright lights do the Democrats have to put up for that seat?
Well, one of the bright lights is obviously Gabby Giffords, who I think not only would be a formidable candidate, but would give us the best opportunity to win that seat as Democrats.
But we have no idea if she'll be able to run.
And one of the things I said, and it got misconstrued, I said it's if Gabby chooses to do this, that should be priority number one for all of us. If she chooses to defend her seat in 8 after redistricting, then that's her call as well. And I said, but Democrats as a whole, until that call is made, should be assessing what else is available to us. And you're right. You're hearing more about people that don't want to take this race on than you are about people that should be in the front. I hope we don't end up with a toss-in candidate that doesn't make a formidable debate and a race out of this. This is a lot at stake. It doesn't happen. Once you're in for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And, as much as I've enjoyed Kyle's company over the last 10 years in Congress, I would like a change of pace. And for me, someone coming in that has the resources and name ID isn't as important as a serious campaign. Because you've got a long time here to establish that, and I hope people step forward. I'm a little chagrined that we're going to get to a point where we don't have a candidate, then we're going to have a primary with 3 also runs, and then somebody's going to win that primary, and then we're going to get slaughtered in the general. When I say we Democrats, right. Great question, no good answer to it.
Congressman Raul Grijalva has been our Friday Focus guest on the Buckmaster Show. It's good to see you, Congressman.
Good to see you.
And have a great Easter weekend. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Good to see you.
And Linda Valdez will stick around after our break. We'll have our Friday Radio Reporters Roundtable. And, of course, what do you think we'll be talking about? The state budget and the legislative session wrapping up. We'll be back.
This is Tucson's Jolt, KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Violence erupted across Syria during huge protests today. That sound is from a YouTube video of a shooting. At least 30 people were killed when security forces fired on demonstrators. This man in the city of Homs says people started to panic.
It was actually like hell. Everybody was terrified. We start running. In my own eyes, I saw 2 injured people down.
More than 200 people have been killed since demonstrations started last month. U.S. drones will be used to help the Libyan opposition in their fight against Muammar Gaddafi's troops. Also today, Senator John McCain made a surprise visit to the city of Benghazi. Police on Long Island, New York, are digging a little deeper today as they search for clues in a possible serial killing case. They're searching an area where a human skull was discovered. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
When you're shopping for a home, at Wells Fargo, we're with you. That's why we created the Wells Fargo Priority Buyer Pre-Approval. Come in, sit down, and talk with a Wells Fargo Home Mortgage Consultant, and we'll let you know the mortgage loan range for which you could qualify. A Priority Buyer Pre-Approval is a great first step to help you start looking at homes within your price range. Wells Fargo. Together, we'll go far. A Priority Buyer Pre-Approval is not a commitment to lend. Please call for additional program details. Wells Fargo Home Mortgage is a division of Wells Fargo Bank, N.A., member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The Home Depot has the only interior paint rated number 1 2 years in a row. Behr Premium Plus Ultra Paint and Primer in 1. So, those stripes on the living room wall? Covered. Kitchen's burgundy walls need a lighter shade? Covered in about half the time, leaving you with years of beautiful true color. Thanks to the only interior paint that's rated number 1, Behr Premium Plus Ultra. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. Paint rated by leading consumer study. See store for details.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
With 30 projects under construction, including work at La Cañada Drive and the First Avenue bus pullouts, the Regional Transportation Authority is delivering our promise to you already. RTA has completed 174 projects, including 5 major roadways, and launched transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle. Your tax dollars are creating jobs and making travel around our region faster and safer. Please be careful of workers in those areas and obey all traffic signs. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Since 1959, Assistance League of Tucson has helped thousands of disadvantaged men, women, and children in the Tucson community. Our thrift shop donations and sales provide more than half of needed funding, which goes to programs like Operation School Bell. Since its inception, Operation School Bell has provided clothing and school supplies for more than 38,000 children. But we need your help. Donate an item or a financial gift. Shop our thrift store or volunteer. For more information on how you can make a difference, visit AssistanceLeagueTucson.org.
It's 35 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show and BuckmasterShow.com. I am Bill Buckmaster. It's time for our Friday radio roundtable. Joining me on the roundtable, Linda Valdez of the Arizona Republic, Sarah Garrett Gaston of the Arizona Daily Star, and Jim Ninsel from the Tucson Weekly, who joins us on the Buckmaster Show live line. And we're going to begin, of course, with the 2011 legislative session, now history. Maybe we'll start with Jim Ninsel, and you have a cover story in the Weekly about the winners and losers of this session. Jim, it seemed like the losers column was pretty short.
If you look at who came out the winner in this budget cycle, the only agency that really got any kind of significant increase in spending was the prisons, and then the corporations enjoyed about $40 million tax break this year, and that will grow to about $538 million. Estimated in about 5 years when it's fully kicked in. So they were certainly the big winners out of this whole session. But the list of losers is long, which you would expect after cutting about $1 billion in spending out of the state budget. And it ranges from kids in K through 12 to the universities to preschoolers to folks who depend on the state for help with their health care needs to the state parks to the arts to... Well, just about everything the state does.
Linda Valdez, what was your take on the session?
Well, it's good that it's over. That's about the best thing you can say about it. It was the one bright light was they did not pass and this year's version of SB 1070. The immigration bills were stopped. But, you know, Rose Mofford used to call state budgets a moral document. Well, this is clearly an immoral document. They gave tax breaks to corporations and cut health care for the poor. In the process, they gave up federal matching money in several areas, and they set the state up for future cuts. And really, this was an ideological movement to cut state government and put state government in a position where it will need to be cut over and over again in coming years. There was no effort to look at new revenue. There was no recognition that many of the things that the state does are things that people need and expect to be done. And as Jim pointed out, prisons did okay, which is probably a good thing, because if we cut universities and elementary schools, you're going to need more prisons.
Sarah Garrett-Gasson.
Well, I just want to say, I apologize for my voice. Allergies are not my friend right now.
And it really came on you hard this week, didn't it?
It did, and I feel like I could do a Barry White impersonation or something, so sorry about that.
That's all right.
The budget, as Linda said, the best thing about this legislative session is that it's over. And once again, the legislature went into this with ideological, very conservative Republican, Tea Party-leaning sort of ideas of what they wanted to do, and those aren't based in reality in terms of how do you help a state get back on the right direction when we've had such a high unemployment rate. Our foreclosure rate has been one of the highest in the nation, if not the highest, and we're having real problems, and the budget just seems to be done in a vacuum that doesn't acknowledge to make a better future, you have to build, and cut just isn't going to get it done.
And I would make the point that, you know, as Linda pointed out, the federal matching funds that we're losing as a result of this are dollars that are coming in that we've paid into the federal government from out of state, essentially, to help bring more money into Arizona and help the Arizona economy. And by foregoing that, and if these health care cuts go through, and there's a real question about whether or not they can, whether or not the federal government will allow some of the things that have been proposed, and whether or not there can be a successful court challenge of some of the other things that were done, you're going to lose $1 billion in federal matching funds, and the hospitals are really bugging out over that. They're saying this is really going to cause some catastrophes in the healthcare arena, and I think we all want to know that there's going to be good, solid hospitals on the day that we need them, and someday we all do.
Well, there were two controversial measures that the governor did veto this week. Linda Valdez, the bill allowing anyone to carry a firearm in the public rights of way passing through a university or community college. Then there was the bill requiring candidates for president to submit a long form birth certificate or alternative documents proving that they are natural-born citizens before their name can be placed on the Arizona ballot.
The governor did a good thing in vetoing those two bills. Unfortunately, I think her vetoes, the reasons she gave for her vetoes were not as strong as they could have been. She said that she didn't make the point when she vetoed the birther bill that President Obama has clearly demonstrated that he was born in the United States. She didn't make the point that it was an unneeded measure. She just expressed some concern. She said it was a bridge too far. I thought that's a little bit of an understatement. But, of course, we should all be glad that she didn't sign it. The Arizona legislature became the first legislature to actually pass such a bill. We can be very thankful that we did not become the first state to actually sign it into law. The guns on campus bill was also, she said it was poorly written. Well, it was a ridiculous idea, and it was opposed by law enforcement. It was opposed by the universities. And it never should have been passed by the legislature. She did a good thing in vetoing that again, but I would have preferred maybe a stronger statement about the folly of that bill. Interestingly, Ron Gould, who was its champion, said her veto letter was rude. He was offended by her veto letter. I believe she still has the omnibus gun bill that she has to act on, and we can hope that she vetoes that one.
Well, I find it rude that some state lawmakers pay no attention to people who are actually at the universities and the community colleges and what they actually want to happen in terms of guns on campus, because the response was almost unanimously negative from what I can from what I know. And I teach at the university, and students in my class were very concerned, and they brought it up themselves, and they were like, what's going on? What's the deal here?
I was just going to say, and Jim, I'll bring you in on this. There is a veto that a lot of people are hoping for at the university, and Sarah brings up the university community, and that's this issue concerning UMC and taking away the control of the Board of Regents from UMC for 18 months. And there is a huge concern that doctors will be leaving UMC if the governor decides not to veto this.
Yeah, well, to be perfectly honest, I don't fully understand the entire financial arrangements that are going on with the UMC and the university physicians. I do know that there was obviously a move by the regents to change the current structure, and that was responded to by the Arizona legislature at the very last minute, who originally was going to put in a board of politically appointed people to oversee the hospitals. And I think that would have been absolutely disastrous if it had gone through. And now we have this other bill that would kind of maintain a status quo with the current board for 18 months. But I think when the legislature steps up and starts meddling in just about anything, it rarely goes well. And so I would say a veto of this bill would probably be in the best interest of those of us in Tucson.
Yeah, the Arizona Board of Regents is an academic appointed board. They are appointed to oversee the state's university system, NAU, ASU, and the U of A. And they are the best qualified people, I believe, in the system to be in charge or oversee an academic medical institution. If you're including the College of Medicine, UA Healthcare, and other university resources, there is every reason that an academic board should be in charge. It just doesn't make any sense to have it be run by political appointees or by people who don't really understand the academic nature of things, because for all the talk that we can be more efficient, more businesslike, there are things that are intrinsic to an academic institution that the Board of Regents is in the best position to oversee.
I think it's important also to remember that the doctors at UMC, these are highly qualified individuals who have lots of opportunity to go other places. And if they feel an uncertainty or a lack of support, they can leave, and we lose a lot. And that's also an issue with the cuts that the universities have suffered from the legislature. We stand to lose some remarkable talent that Arizona has been able to amass for itself. And that's a loss that would be very difficult to make up in the future.
A couple of important decisions were made before the session ended. The Arizona voters will be deciding next year, Jim Nintzel, whether to scrap public financing of elections for statewide and legislative office. This referendum would also affect the city of Tucson's system of helping eligible candidates finance their campaigns.
You know, the Clean Elections was put into place by the voters back in 1998. We've had about a decade now of seeing how it played out. And I was fully in support of the experiment when it first began. I thought it was going to be a terrific way of breaking the link between special interest dollars and legislation. And I don't think that has really succeeded. I think it's clear that lobbyists still have a lot of influence up at the Capitol. I think that's clear simply by the fact that the Clean Elections people, when they were fighting this legislation, hired one of the best lobbyists up there, Michael Williams, themselves, to try to persuade lawmakers not to pass this legislation. So certainly the lobbyists still have all the influence that they want up there at the Capitol. So that end of it has not succeeded. I think what it has had is a very unintended consequence as far as the people on the left who proposed this originally intended, which is that it has really empowered the social conservatives, who have done a remarkable job of purging the Republican Party of moderates. And if you take a look at the legislature we had 10 years ago and the legislature we have now, I think very few people on the left would think that we are in better hands today than we were 10 years ago. And so, in my estimation, Clean Elections has not really fulfilled its promise to the voters. But they'll have their say, and I expect we'll have a pretty vigorous campaign between now and next election.
Linda Valdez, a lot of, as you know, with referendums is how it is worded. And this one could be really tricky.
Well, that's true. If it's presented to people as no public financing for candidates, of course, people are going to be opposed to it. But I tend to agree with Jim. I think that in concept, clean elections is a great idea. But in practice, we have not gotten a better legislature as a result. And it might be time to take a look at it. And I don't really have a problem with referring it back to voters. I think that's probably one of the few things I might agree with that came out of the legislature this time.
Sarah?
Yeah, with the public financing of elections, it sounds like a great idea, a way to get more people into the process. But the result has been, unfortunately, in a lot of cases, that the people who don't have to go to the Rotary Clubs and the business groups and the civic organizations and the neighborhood associations and really prove themselves and be vetted publicly end up in the primary taking the nomination. And so as a result, we get the really farly skewed to the right candidates that don't represent accurately their districts.
The Arizona Court of Appeals, Jim Nenzel, ruled this week. We've been waiting for this decision on whether or not the state has any business telling the city of Tucson how to run its elections. And looks like the city of Tucson and the council elections will be the way they are right now, correct?
Yes, the Court of Appeals, at least, and this is something that's going to be sliding up the judicial ladder to the Supreme Court in the near future, did decide that the state had no business overriding the city charter in an area of local concern, which is what the elections of our own city council members are. And so we'll see exactly where this still goes, because the fight is not over and the Supreme Court has to make a decision. But there was a blogger over at Blog for Arizona, AZ Blue Meanie, who suggested that the whole reason that the court waited as long as they did was they were waiting for the legislative session to end so that once their ruling came out, the legislature wouldn't just pass another law once again, forcing the city to change its ways. So, there may be some truth to that.
And speaking of elections, Representative, the Republican candidate Ron Asta has decided he will be staying in the race. Sarah?
Yeah, he asked for a public comment. Should I stay or should I go?
And I think 100 folks said please
take yourself and move along.
And 30 said, oh, yeah, we're backing you.
Yeah, but apparently those 30 were very persuasive because he's decided to stay in the race. So it's just one of these puzzling things that I don't think bodes well for the future of his campaign.
Jim, a quick comment on Ron Asta?
Well, you know, I think it's not the strongest Republican field I've seen running for mayor out there, and I don't think Ron has a tremendous shot at becoming mayor of Tucson, given our current voter registration disadvantage that Republicans have and his own history. But, you know, it's what democracy is all about, and if he weren't running for office, I'd have a whole lot less to write about this year.
There you go. That would keep you very busy. Linda Valdez, good to see you again. Thank you very much for rejoining us on the roundtable.
Good to be here, Bill. Thank you.
And Sarah Garrett Gasson, I hope you feel a little bit better.
Thank you.
And Jim Nenzel, work hard. See you later. That's going to do it for the Reporters Roundtable, and we will be back with our weekend watch.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting. And you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Tucson's Regional Transportation Authority uses your tax dollars to create jobs and make local travel faster and safer. Transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle and the completion of five major roadways are examples of how RTA is delivering on our promises to you. With 174 projects completed and 30 under construction, such as the First Avenue bus pullouts and La Cañada Drive, RTA wants to remind you to be careful of road workers and to obey all traffic signs. RTA, delivering our promises to you.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Savino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
I hear that music and it sounds like there's a big crowd out by the pool and somebody's going to get tossed in the pool. It's time for the Weekend Watch on the Buckmaster Show, and Friday mornings we are joined by Matt Russell, Tucson publicist and host of the weekly radio show On the Menu Live, which airs Thursday afternoons at 5 here on KJLL. Matt, are you out there by the pool, got your Hawaiian shirt on, ready for the weekend?
Well, I certainly have the Hawaiian shirt on. It's casual Friday at Russell Public Communications. Sadly, though, I'm nowhere near a pool, but I hope to fix that by noon today.
What's going on this weekend? Anything dog lovers?
Yeah. I mean, there are dog lovers all over this community. So my pick for Saturday, Bill, is the third annual Valley Animal Hospital Tucson Canine Classic. Now, get this. There's going to be hundreds of dogs out on the U of A Mall Saturday beginning at 3 o'clock, and there's going to be a 5K walk and run. There's going to be a doggy talent show, a doggy fashion show, over 50 exhibitors, and of course there's going to be great food. There always has to be great food at any Matt Russell pick on Saturday. There's going to be live music, and this all goes to benefit certain rescue groups across the community, including FAIR, which is the Foundation for Animals in Risk. Again, the Tucson Canine Classic Saturday beginning at 3 p.m. on the U of A Mall.
FAIR, they do such a great job.
Indeed they do. I mean, I'm a dog lover. I'm a dog owner. Dog is so much a part of our lives and of our families, and this organization here in town really helps to maximize opportunities for pet lovers across the community.
It is the Easter weekend. Lots of folks will be out on Sunday, not only worshiping, but then after worship going to a brunch. There are a lot of options, aren't there?
Lot of options, and Bill, we need a whole other hour of the Buckmaster Show to take your listeners on a tour of everything that's going on in the Easter brunch circuit on Sunday. But I want to say hello to all of my good friends at Metro Restaurants, who really have helped to define the sort of the new innovative Easter brunch. Quickly, we'll go through the Metro Restaurants opportunities. Metropolitan Grill on Oracle and McGee, they have a great two-course Easter menu, including an Easter ham with a sour cherry sauce. Ross. My mouth is watering, Bill. Right down the street then at the Old Pueblo Grill on Alvernon and Broadway, they're going to have a great Easter brunch buffet. The centerpiece of this buffet is a lovely house-smoked beef brisket, which just sounds absolutely divine. And then, of course, the flagship restaurant, the destination of Metro restaurants, McMahon's Prime Steakhouse on Swan and Fort Lowell, has a delicious prime Easter brunch buffet with something called the carved roasted leg of lamb and a carved prime rib like no one else can do, and that's at McMahon's Prime Steakhouse. Your listeners can get all this information simply by going to the website, metrorestaurants.com. Click on a restaurant, get all the information on each of the menus and how you can make reservations. And that, Bill, is the operative word. Reservations, as you know, on Easter, always very, very important.
Very important. And, of course, our friends at the Arizona Inn, they'll be having a special occasion as well on Easter. But it's so important, as you say. Everybody's out and about, it seems like, on Easter Sunday. So you do need to make those reservations.
Indeed. I've actually been to an Arizona Inn Easter brunch a while ago, and I still have treasured memories of how well I was treated, the wonderful culinary experience that you get down there in this wonderfully historic space. I love the Arizona Inn.
Next on the menu live, I understand you're headed for Feast.
Yes, next Thursday, the 28th, is our monthly Tucson Originals show. We try to feature a Tucson Originals chef on the last Thursday of every month. We're going to be sitting down with Chef Doug Levy of Feast, who a few months ago moved his wonderful restaurant just a little bit west on Speedway, probably tripled the size of the space. He's one of our very favorite chefs. What he does in the culinary arts has been celebrated across the country. We're going to get him for a half an hour and get inside his head and see what it takes to put smiles on the faces of sophisticated foodies across southern Arizona.
You want to give that Feast location?
You know what? I do not have the actual address. Isn't that horrible? You put me on the spot.
Oh, I'm sorry there.
No, that's okay. That's all right. You know what you can do? You can go to TucsonOriginals.com. All of the members of the Tucson Originals are there with links to their websites. We're going to be in the studio with Chef Levy, so it's not going to be a remote broadcast from Feast, but we certainly encourage your listeners to go and introduce themselves to Chef Levy and get a sense of what he's doing.
Thank you so much, Matt. Time to get you out by the pool. Have a
great
weekend.
It's pool time, Bill. You do the same. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you as well. And the Buckmaster Show brought to you in part by Flowers Rieger & Associates, Certified Public Accountants, 2919 East Broadway, and on the web at flowersrieger.com. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. On behalf of Team Buckmaster, they're all here today, producer Rosemary Brandt and our marketing director, Deborah Howard. I'm Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe Easter weekend.
Local talk at its best.
What are you talking about?
Local talk at its best.
What are you talking about?
Tucson's Jolt. KJLL, South Tucson.